When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavor swirling together with cold brew topped with a velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. And that imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. Participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans. I'm Steven, joined by the ever-insightful Rodrigo Lopez and Ookla the Mock's very own Rand Bellavia as we dive into the world where cities vanish into oblivion and Displaced Number One, explore the galaxy's greatest tales in 2000 AD, and navigate the dark, intoxicating pathways of Night People. And we're going to wrap up this show with a ride through the heart-filled, hilarious saga of Shirtless Bear Fighter Volume 1 from Image Comics, where fist-fighting bears meets epic storytelling. So sit back, relax, and let's embark on this adventure together. It's the Major Spoilers Podcast number 1063, and it begins right now. Yes, we are here this week, minus Matthew, family situation that he's dealing with. So we're sending our thoughts out to him this week. But Rand is here this week. Hello, Rand.
Hello.
I'm glad that you're here. It's been a couple of weeks. I'm sure you don't have a whole lot of new things to talk about, and you have your upcoming festival that you've got, right?
Yes, we're going to be my band Via Bella is going to be the music guests of honor at FenCon in Dallas, Texas, and that is next weekend, not this weekend. It'll be the 23rd to the 25th. Of February, and again, that's in Dallas. The website is fencon.org, we'll be performing concerts with unique sets on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Very nice.
Doing some workshops, so yeah, we'll be keeping pretty busy.
Ooh, yeah, I'm excited about what's one of the workshops that you're doing?
I'm doing a workshop on it's an arrangement workshop, like kind of arranging songs for live performance. But I've kind of folded in a new element about just basically rehearsal versus practicing and practice techniques. Like a lot of people, you know, the popular phrase is practice makes perfect. And, you know, I really am a firm believer that practice makes permanent. Like if you, obviously we all have a limited amount of spoons. And so, you know, like it's better to practice badly than not practice. But, you know, like, you know, just, you know, if you're going to perform standing up, for God's sake, practice standing up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
How come you don't teach in the music department, Rand?
Oh, I mean, honestly, because I don't have the, you know, like pretty much everything I know about music is intuitive. I don't really, I'll be honest, I don't really understand theory. It's kind of like asking a, you know, if I was at a place where they had a program where it was like, you know, songwriting or, you know, more loose music stuff, sure. But most music programs are like, you know, they want you to be able to teach music theory and things like that. Yeah. And that's just, again, it would be like asking a novelist to write about like, you know, the inner construction of writing or, you know, or language.
Yeah. I get it. What Rand is really saying, ladies and gentlemen, is it's beneath him.
I wish I had been made to take like piano lessons as a child, you know, because I do feel like I don't, you know, like I said, a lot of what I do is intuitive, which is, it's great. And that's why I work really well with Adam English, because Adam is someone who his father was like, you know, the president of the New York State School Music Association. And, he took piano lessons from the time he could, you know, stand up, and he, was really into the theory. And yet he doesn't. And so, you know, whereas I'm the one who's breaking the rules and he's the one that's explaining the rules to me, you know, and so together we work really well.
Okay, cool. So I want to give a little bit of a teaser here. This week on the Top 5 podcast coming up on Thursday/Friday, Rodrigo and I sit down and we talk about our top 5 musicals. And Rand, I understand that you actually wrote like a rock opera at one point.
Well, I've written more than one. I mean, but yes, you know, there is, I mean, Ugo the Mock, of course, did write. We have a monkey rock opera called Smell No Evil that came out in, you know, 2001 or something. But I did write, I guess, what I refer to as a mini rock opera, which was, this would have been in the 90s when I was in library school, when I was getting my master's in library science. There was an assignment where y'all had to like pick an area, like a non-book area of librarianship, and do a 20-minute presentation on it. And I actually missed the day in class. I skipped the day in class where everyone picked. And so when I got there, the only thing left was pamphlets, which tells you how funny what this was, that pamphlets were still a thing. You know, the internet was young. And so I had to give a 20-minute presentation on pamphlets. And the professor said, you know, I grade really highly on, you know, creativity. Creativity is king. And so I wrote a 20-minute mini rock opera about pamphlets. And I got up there with my guitar and performed this thing. Nice. And then the funny thing is that, like, 10 years later, I was teaching in the program at the University of Buffalo, in the library school program. And I actually, one day before class, I overheard some students talking about some lunatic who in the past had performed a rock opera about pamphlets. And they had no idea that I was the person that they were talking about.
Did you sneak up behind them? And then when they're like, can you believe that guy? And then you're like, lean in and say, I know, it was me.
Yes.
If they were in a library, that would have definitely happened, when they like pull a book out and it just like ran space behind it. Hey, guess what, kids?
So yes, where can people find this fantabulous opera about pamphlets?
Yeah, I will admit the entire rock opera has been lost to the ages.
Oh, boo.
But during isolation, you know, like many of us, I was going through old piles of things, you know, paperwork and whatnot. And I found it, you know, within a pile of notes, you know, like of lyrics and stuff, I found the lyrics and the chords to like the intro piece to the rock opera. And I was amazed that I remembered the melody, like, even though I never recorded it, it was like right there for me. And so I started performing that along with Aaron. I kind of arranged it for two voices, and we started performing it in our online concerts. And then I ended up writing a new intro piece for it that I wrote that in like 2021 or something. And we started performing it because it's a fun story to tell on stage, and it's an absurd piece of music. And so, and I did, we are going to have Viabella's Live in Germany album will be coming out in March. And we're gonna, and we, that this pamphlet's intro is indeed on the album. And so you all gonna get to hear an advanced version of it, I think.
Yeah, let's take a listen to this right now. Here is 1/20th of the mini rock opera about pamphlets. This is the intro. Take a listen.
What should we do? What should we do? What should we do with the pamphlets?
If you've got some information that you need disseminated,
cogent or instructional with data that will soon be dated,
and must be laconic in a paper format,
we can all agree you'll need a pamphlet for that.
Look out, there's an emergency,
and nobody knows what to do.
All the librarians in the library,
and the paraprofessionals
are
too,
running around waving their arms in panic, bracing each other in fear. The whole circulation desk's covered in pamphlets. There's no room to store them all here. It's not that they've run out of room on the shelves, just that they do not stand up by themselves. Pamphlets get damaged when placed next to books. They're fragile and tempting to library crooks. Pamphlets are unbound and oblong and not made to last.
What should we do? What should we do? What should we do with the pamphlets?
I'm kind of interested, Brandon, you digging through your notes again and finding the rest of that and piecing it back together.
Yeah, it was weird that I found that and I didn't find anything else. And I know that, I know, like, I worked on some of this with Adam, because I know that there's, like, the larger piece of music that kind of, like, the recurring theme, or, you know, musically, we ended up cannibalizing. Using for, we have a song called Spot the Cat, which is like a, it's a musical setting of Data's poem that he wrote, Ode to Spock, or Ode to Spot, that is, about his cat. And and that, the theme of that, you know, musically was taken, you know, like we took it from this. But yeah, I don't have, like I said, yeah, for whatever reason, I don't have the lyrics to that anywhere. And I don't really, you know, it's kind of fallen out of my head. I have to, that means that the intro is probably the best part. You know what I mean? Let's be honest.
All right. So there is one other thing that's been, I don't know, people go look up Rand Bellavia on Facebook. This last week, or I guess it's within the last week, Rand posted a picture of himself, a very young Rand at the age of 21, reading Kurt Vonnegut's brand new Hocus Pocus while on a bus to New York. And this picture of you, Rand, I don't know what, but it screams like this guy probably busks on weekends. Were you ever a busker?
Never like seriously, you know, like I wasn't like, you know, like I never was like trying to make my living as a busker. Yeah. I certainly busked. And honestly, you'll appreciate this. I used to perform outside of a comic book store in Buffalo.
Yeah.
with the blessing of the, you know, the owner, of course.
Yeah.
I would do my silly songs about, you know, superheroes, outside the store as people look, particularly on, on the earliest free comic book days, as a celebration of that.
Yeah. So, I've got a friend who is retiring very soon. And he has decided he's going to travel the country in a van, right? He's going to build out his van to have that van life going. And one of the things that he's been doing on a quite regular basis is going around town busking, just to, you know, because he's a musician and he loves doing it. And he's like, listen, if I could make 20, 30 bucks a day, I've got my meals taken care of. And it's something that keeps me practicing, as you're talking about practicing. And keeps the creative juices going. So I saw that picture. I had him in my mind, and then I saw this picture of you. Yeah. Good Lord, 21, Rand. Yeah, it was a long time ago. I look at myself at 21, and I don't recognize myself. So very cool, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah,
go ahead.
How old are you? If you might say it out loud. I have no concept.
I was born in 1970. So. So
you and Adam are the same age.
Yeah.
I was born in 1969. So
yeah, you are very close to the same age as my friend who's retiring and wants to do the van life. So yeah, he was born in 65. Yes. So yeah. Yeah.
And Rodrigo was born 7 years ago.
Feels like it, right? He's got that fresh baby face.
Yeah. No, I was born in 83. So I'm all of 40.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but that's the thing. Once you hit 40, then the age difference doesn't really matter.
No, it really doesn't, hasn't mattered for a very long time, especially because for a long time we've had several younger co-hosts on the show. So they inherited the title of kid a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, I have always been comfortable with people much older than me. You know, even 10 to 15 years older than me, like one of my good friends in college was at least I think Brian's about a decade older, right? Isn't he about a decade older than me? I think he is, or 7 years at least. Age does not bother me in the least, like it does other people, but there you go. Rand, where can people find more of Bellavia music?
Yes. Our last album and our new album, once it's available, will be the way to get it both digitally and on CD would be through going to our Bandcamp page, which is viabellaband.bandcamp.com. Also, our first album is also certainly available wherever you stream music. You know, if you go to, wherever, you know, Spotify or YouTube or Apple Music or wherever. You can get our first album is called The Way of Beauty, and our new album, which should be out in March, is going to be called Live in Germany, And guess where we recorded it? and that should be, I'm going to get that loaded up to Bandcamp soon. So, it probably will be out in early March, but pre-orders will probably be available, as early as next week.
All right. Very cool. Dear listeners, what do you think of pamphlets? Do you want to get Rand to go down a spiraling hole of madness to bring this full thing to life? Then head over to our Discord channel. You can talk about this or anything else that's on your mind at the Major Spoilers Discord server. You can join for free. We'd love to see your face join our growing community of awesome spoilerites. There is I think there's a music channel. If not, we should create a music channel. But there is a link in the show notes and all sorts of fantabulous gifts awaiting your arrival. All right, that is out of the way. Let us do some reviews. Looks like I'm first this week. Boom Studios is releasing The Displaced number one from Ed Brisson and Luke Casalaguida. It is out this week, and the premise is interesting. Here's the thing. It feels like a premise that I have seen somewhere else before, but I went to try and track it down and I couldn't find it anywhere. So it's disappeared into ether, which is interesting because this is a story that takes place in Canada where, in the middle of the night, three people that we meet are outside the city limits of Oshawa, and they're doing various things. One woman is up at 2 a.m. because she needs to go get diapers for her kid, and so her husband's at home. Another guy is on his way back from seeing his dad, or on his way to see his dad, who is an invalid and is going downhill. And the third guy is a guy who is trying to get out of Oshawa. And as the story progresses, there's a huge earthquake. And when people get to the city limits of Oshawa, there's just a giant hole. And people are like, oh my God, a giant sinkhole has swallowed the entire city of 170,000 people. And to be honest, living in Western Kansas, where we do have sinkholes because of taking out the groundwater, I am often terrified that this entire city is going to be sucked in by a giant sinkhole, right? And so this kind of, first of all, hit home to me. And I was like, well, 170,000, certainly a lot more people than where I live. But everybody, there's no rescue efforts going on. And then a couple days later, we check in with the woman whose baby and husband were at home when this incident happened. And she's like, yeah, my husband's parents kept calling me nonstop, telling me that why wasn't I home? They're trying to blame me for all of this and thinking that I'm sleeping around. And then yesterday they just stopped calling. And I don't understand why. And then eventually, another event happens where they all go back to the site of the city, and it's just an empty field, no sinkhole, no nothing. And the crazy old man shows up, and the guy from that was going to go see his dad shows up, and the crazy old man is the reason why people aren't talking about this on the news anymore, and why people have moved on, is because every time this event happens, people completely forget about everything. And he mentions, these other cities that this has happened with over the years. And the premise is that this event happens, it takes up a bunch of people, and then everyone, for whatever reason, starts to forget. And we also start to learn by the end of this issue that the survivors are also being forgotten. Like the guy that wanted to go see his dad, he's at a bar, and someone's like, I can't remember what that guy's name is. And so it's really kind of intense. From the story. So I am on board for this thing the entire way, just to see what weird, crazy, story that Ed has planned for this. I'm also very concerned that it is going to bump up too closely to my own fears and conspiracy theories, that it might drive me mad. But I'm down for this. And the art is really good, too. I enjoyed the art very, very much. Just bringing in the heightened, on the edge feeling that the writing brings in, and then showing that in visuals. I liked it very, very much. So The Displaced number one is out this week from Boom Studios. There's a link in the show notes if you would like to pick it up for yourself. I'm giving this 4.5 slices of meatloaf out of 5. Just enjoyed it just so much. And I can't wait to see what happened to all the missing peoples. So there you go. All right, coming out next week, Rodrigo, something, last week we were talking the strontium dog, which was a regular in 2000 AD. And so I wonder if that didn't prompt you to pick up 2000 AD Prague 2370 out next week from Rebellion Publishing.
Yeah, definitely two things. One, the fact that we did Strontium Dog and I got to look at 2000 AD again, because, you know, we had done stuff out of 2000 AD. And of course, that when I went to look at comics, Rand had already called the comic that I was going to do. Because that's
You're
just...
kidding. Really?
That's the wavelength that we're in.
Are we really? That would be the third time.
Yep.
People need to understand, there's like 30 comics to choose from. And we keep getting the same one. That's amazing.
All right. If you don't know, 2000 AD is an anthology book and has been since it first started coming out in, 300 BC. In this particular issue, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stories. So there's a Judge Dredd story. There's another sort of George Dredd adjacent story called The Fall of Dead World. And then there are three other stories that don't have anything to do with Judge Dredd. They're kind of their own stories. One of them is called Indigo Prime, and the main character is like very obviously and pointedly supposed to be Johnny Depp. They just give him a different name. Johnny Depp is a controversial figure at this point, so I was a little weirded out by it. But that one wasn't my favorite anyway. There's one called Full Tilt Boogie. That one was a lot more interesting to me. Sort of about this young woman exploring these futuristic, strange ruins. While some like dangerous stuff happens, kind of the issue is that if a lot of the time with these, if you're like, what happened in this specific part of this specific story, like a lot of the time the answer is Judge Dredd noticed that something was happening, right? It's like a lot of time nothing actually happens because these are actually so short, such short segments. I want to say that like. Like Dark Horse Presents, if you had ever read that, it's a similar situation, but I feel like 2000 AD is like even more. It's like the stories are both longer and like they have longer arcs, but have shorter installments.
Eight pages each, right?
Yeah, something like that. So it's cool. But definitely, this is my first jumping back into 2000 AD stuff, and it's jarring to all of a sudden be like, okay, that's interesting, and then have, anywhere from a, like, very drastic cliffhanger where it's like, okay, clearly we're going to go to something else, to, like, a mild cliffhanger or maybe somebody just saying something that's, like, evocative, and then you flip the page and you're in a different story.
Yeah.
I am not going to factor that into my Meatloaf rating because obviously this is what this book does and this is what this book has been doing for, I believe, 2000 actual years. So I can't really, poo-poo it for being an anthology book, especially since I like anthology books. So there were none of these where I thought that the art was bad. In fact, the art is just excellent. In all of these stories, like, unlike what we read from way back in the, was it 70s, late 80s? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, late
Strontium Dog. So I'm not 80s, saying that was bad, but there were definitely a much closer type of art between each of the stories, right? Mm-hmm. It's like there was kind of a 2000 AD style. Like, this really does not have that. In fact, the Judge Dredd story looks very different from the Dead World story, which I believe is somehow connected. So it's interesting. It's interesting because you don't just get five new stories, but you also get five completely different art styles. If there's something you don't like here, it only lasts like 8 pages, and then you're on to something else. If there's something you like, it only lasts 8 pages, but you can just pick it up next, whenever it comes
next
out
week. Next,
which,
every week.
Yeah, next
every
week.
Every week. Yeah.
And that's why I think is like, that's why I think it's okay that the installments are so short, is because next week you're going to have it to read anyway. I'm going to give it 4.5 slices of meatloaf. I really enjoyed it, and getting into 2000 AD may be something that I end up doing, since, again, if you guys recall way back in the day, I was like first in line for Dark Horse Presents.
Right.
That's how I found out about Resident Alien. That's how we actually found out about lots of stories that were coming out.
Mm-hmm.
This might be how we also find out about future trades, because 2000 AD does that now. They
yep.
publish these, and then they publish the full stories if they're popular, I guess. So yeah, totally. Good yeah. times.
Very cool. So 2000 AD issue Prague 2370 comes out next week in the UK.
Oh, okay.
But I think there's like a 2 week delay. I've never really been able to track this down, because when they send us the review copies, they're like, hey, here's what's coming out next week. And it's like, is that coming out next week in the UK, or is that coming out next week in the United States? And I think there's like a 1 or 2 week delay. Yeah. I don't see it on the 21st list, so it may be coming out the first weekend,
I mean,
or the last weekend.
I'm not aware. Has it ever been published in the United States? I mean, every issue I've gotten has always been as an import.
Yeah. So, at least from what in the last, I don't know, decade or so since Rebellion has been sending us this stuff, it seems like they do send stuff to the United States, but it's got a delay on it. And I think it's also a special order, so I don't think it's like you're going to be able to go into your comic book shop and pick it up. But definitely on the previews and the GoCollect.com website, they always release, always list the 2000 AD stuff from Rebellion when it comes out. So I like this, Rodrigo. I like that you're getting into this. It's really cool. The cover is really cool with Judge Dredd and Judge, I don't know, Ghost Rider on the cover, Judge Fire. And or no, it's Judge Death and Judge Fire.
Well, I was gonna say it's got to be Judge Death. Yeah,
yeah, and yeah, and maybe this will lead to some more UK stuff finding its way here onto the Major Spoilers podcast in the near future. Yeah. So thank you for that. All right, now we're jumping several weeks ahead. Without Matthew here, Rodrigo had to take the obscure comic route, but now Rand gets to take Rodrigo's job and pick the thing that's like a month out. And talk to us about Night People number one.
Yes. Now, Night People number one is written by Chris Condon or Condon,
right.
Who we were talking about 2 weeks ago as the author of That Texas Blood.
Mm-hmm.
This is an adaptation of a novel by an author named Barry Gifford. This is another reason why this was intriguing to me, is because film fans may recognize his name, because he wrote the screenplays for Lost Highway and Wild at Heart, the David Lynch film.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And so, and the idea, my understanding is that this you know, will be, I think, a 6-issue series, and each issue will be illustrated by a different artist. This first issue, the art is by a guy named Brian Level, who I had never heard of before this. But you know, I will say, you know, with given the description I had read, plus knowing that it was Chris Condon writing an adaptation of, you know, a novel by the guy that wrote Lost Highway and Wild at Heart, I kind of went into it expecting something dark, and I was not wrong. The story opens with you have two decapitated bodies, and police trying to figure out what's going on. And you kind of hop around a bit to different characters. We settle on two characters, two women, Bette and Cutie. They both recently escaped from prison and are on a multi-state killing spree. They are cutting the heads off of men as instructed by what they refer to as the Book of Becoming. It's a sacred text in which Miss Jesus, as they refer to her, teaches that, and I quote, the female side must desert the male side, who done everything wrong from the beginning. Now would be a good time to say that Bette and Cutie admit that they, in fact, wrote the Book of Becoming.
All right.
So, and there's a lot more going on in this issue, but certainly in the first issue, that's the narrative that sticks. You know, the pages with Bette and Cutie are certainly the ones that that caught my attention the most. I will say, you know, this first issue, it seemed both the story and the art seemed, I guess, unfocused. Like I said, they're throwing a lot of characters against the wall, and I didn't form a lot of memories with any of the storylines except the stuff with Bette and Cutie. And as far as the art, it's sloppy. And I like sloppy art, but you know, I would say the only thing wrong with Brian Lovell's art style is that I don't particularly like it, if that's fair. Like I wouldn't say that it's bad. It just didn't really speak to me very much. But again, that doesn't really enter into my thoughts on the book since apparently there's rotating artists. Yeah, I guess I'm curious to know why Chris Condon took this project on, because I feel like both the story and the characters and the dialogue, none of it are as interesting to me as literally everything else I've read from him that he's created. And I felt like in this issue, I was thinking that, well, I would at least be, as I kind of was working through it, I was like, well, maybe I'll get some of that kind of WTF as entertainment energy that we get from Gifford's work with David Lynch. And even that really was not really there in this first issue.
This has not been adapted. This has not been adapted anywhere else, has it? This isn't Night People hasn't been turned into a HBO series or something like that.
No, not that I'm aware of. And in fact, I was unaware of this as a novel until I read about this. Until I read the solicitation for this a few months ago. But I mean, I will say, like, all of that kind of negativity. I will probably check out a collection of this. As I guess Chris Condon has banked a reasonable amount of trust with me, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I've really liked everything I've read from him, and I just trust that there's a reason. You know, he's not doing this for the money. You know what I mean? It's not like this is, you know, a major, it's from Oni Press, you know, and so I'm assuming he's doing this because it's a labor of love, because he wants people like me to read it, you know, like people that are already mm-hmm. like his work with mm-hmm. Texas Blood or Enfield Gang Massacre. Hey, check this out. And I am. I guess I wouldn't recommend this to anyone who isn't already a fan of his work. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to only give it 2.5 slices of meatloaf. But I will say that, you know, I will certainly be back for the collection. And I expect that number will probably rise for the whole story.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to be the person who's just like, oh, they're only doing it for this reason. But I'm also wondering if, and that's why I asked if this was being adapted somewhere else, is if they can get enough hype behind this. Mm-hmm. If there isn't then some plan to say, hey, how about we turn this into, because for whatever reason, some studios would rather read a comic book than read a book.
Yeah. Well, it's easier to sell a comic to Hollywood. But again, though, I would question, you know, Chris Condon doesn't get anything out of that, though.
Well,
you know what I mean?
But maybe he gets a credit out of that, which may be leading to something bigger. Or maybe he's attached as a producer to it or something.
Maybe he's pitching himself as the screenwriter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I have I have no inside knowledge of this, but it just, if I were to say, oh, let me think of some reasons that are not just for a labor of love. And I'm not saying that labor of love is not a valid reason to do something. If I were to say, okay, let's look at some ulterior motives behind this, I might say, oh, this is starting to be a pitch for something bigger. I don't know. We have a preview of this over at majorspoilers.com. If anyone wants to go and check it out ahead of the March 6th release, I think the covers are pretty engaging. But yeah, I think I saw this too. And I saw the two bodies there. And I was like, ooh, this is pretty gruesome. I wonder what Oni Press is thinking, because Oni Press is pretty broad in its offerings. But the go into the gory horror side is not. Yeah. You know, that's a small fraction of their stuff.
No, and I think, Oni has made a bit of noise over the last couple of months indicating that they want 2024 to be kind of a rebirth year for them.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, they kind of came out with a big splash and was it the late 90s?
Mm-hmm.
Did a lot of work with Kevin Smith and a lot of, you know, who was a much bigger deal at that time, of course, to get him. And they did some interesting stuff. And then they kind of went away for, you know, they did Whiteout, with Greg mm-hmm. Rucka and Steve Lieber. And then they kind of went away, but, and it's, I feel like the Rick and Morty comic has been kind of keeping them alive.
Yeah, but they've also, you know, they got, I don't know what the current situation with Lionforge Press is, because Lionforge bought them.
Right.
Five years ago, I want to say, but I never see Lionforge mentioned in anything anymore. So I don't know if they've re-established themselves as their own thing, but they also tend to be very LGBTQAI friendly in a lot of their titles and tend to generate some stuff that is more YA friendly a lot that I see from them. But that's not to say that Oni Press doesn't have stuff that is more adult themed. But yeah, I'm just kind of surprised that this one is usually, I just see a lot of different titles coming from Oni that we talk about on the major spoilers.
Right. Yeah. I think you're right. I think, like I said, I think they're trying to cast a wider net.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, there's nothing wrong with that.
This isn't a shift toward, body horror. I think it's just, they're saying we could also do this, and I think you're going to see in 2024, you're going to see more examples of them trying to go in different directions.
Yeah. They have one that I'm interested in. This is from their April, 2024 solicitations, Akugan, Brutalizer of Gods, looks really, really interesting. And then they have, what's another one that they have? Night People, of course, continues on there. Cemetery Kids Don't Die was another one that I saw, which was kind of like, oh, that one's kind of intense. And then, of course, Rick and Morty and some other stuff. So, yeah, maybe this is them finally getting righted and heading in a direction to keep them going. And, of course, Six Gun fans. Six Gun Omnibus Volume 3 comes out in April as well.
That's a good thing. Anything that keeps these, well-regarded small presses afloat is good for the industry. Obviously.
Yeah, no, I love a lot of the small press people that we deal with. Oni Press is one of them. I still consider Boom Studios a small press. I think that they are a gold level at Premiere, but I still consider them small. Dynamite, I still consider small. Titan Comics, I consider small. And I'm getting very excited when I see stuff coming out of Mad Cave Studios. They just announced a deal with Disney today that they're going to be doing more of their Disney animated shows and movies into comic books, kind of like what Boom Studios did 20 years ago. That's a big feather in their cap too. So I'm very excited to see where a lot of this stuff goes from here. So
absolutely.
Yeah, thank you, Rand, for that. And dear listeners, if you are looking for more reviews, then all you need to do is point your browser to majorspoilers.com. And while we're in between segments here, now would be a good time to say thank you to everyone who supports the shows and all the shows at the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. This week, we are sending huge thank yous out to Nathan and to Nick, two of our newest Silver Level members. Now, listen, when you are a Silver Level patron, you get 4 bonus episodes each month that you're not going to find anywhere else. This week on the Major Spoilers Podcast Pre-Show, we're talking about some of our musicals that are also Rand musicals. So you'll want to go check that out. But if you want to go a little bit higher and become a gold level member, you get up to 8 bonus episodes each month. Plus, you get a true inside look at what it's like to run Major Spoilers, what other companies probably don't do. But we have one of those coming up. I think this weekend is another Major Spoilers VIP live chat. So you want to take part in that. But again, thank you, Nathan. And thank you, Nick. Nick and Nathan. It's like an alliteration shout out this week. Thank you for signing up. And for the rest of you, if you are not currently a member, join us. Patreon.com/Major Spoilers. All right. Go ahead, Rand.
I was going to add in there that you guys discussed also Rand musicals, Rand musicals.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we also did that as well. So people will go check that out as well. Get a little bonus stuff in there, too. Now, listen, for a couple of weeks now, I've been saying, shirtless bear fighter, I cannot wait to see what kind of craziness and insanity that we see, because this guy fights bears naked. And everyone else is like, no, I don't think that's the case, Steven. I don't think that this guy fights bears naked. And now I'm just going to sit back while everyone says, you know what, Steven, you were right. This guy does fight bears naked.
It wasn't called pantsless bear fighter. Like, why distinguish him as shirtless if he's also pantsless? I don't understand it.
Well, apparently, as we find out, shirtless bear fighter, he's wearing pants just because, to be appropriate among the city folk. But when he puts on clothes, he loses his powers. So he's got to at least, if he's going to cover up his massive sensor bar, that they do throughout this issue, then he's going to have to take his shirt off to fight bears. I don't know what you guys thought about this, because I looked at this on two very different levels. And the first level is, I think the level, and I've went out to read some other people's reviews of this, where they're just like, I don't get it. Is it just dick jokes and memes throughout the entire issue? Is that all it is? And on one hand, that's what it is. It is literally just crazy, zany, you know, melt your brain kind of humor as you tell a story about a guy who fights bears and then is also trying to save his forest and take down an evil corporation. While many times in the issue, he's naked and he's got a partner and he's got another guy who he saved back in Nam, all that stuff. So I don't know what, Rand or Rodrigo, what you guys thought about just this top level insanity side of Shirtless Bear Fighter.
Yeah. This is one of my favorite kind of comics. Okay.
Yeah.
I love childlike absurdity.
Yeah.
Okay. And to me, I'm always so impressed when an adult human can tap into this. You know, Art Baltazar taps into this every time he creates something.
Mm-hmm.
Steven, you're probably old enough to remember Bob Burden and Art Adams 1987 masterpiece Gumby's Summer Fun Special.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's one of my favorite comics of all time. The Tick does this. Axe Cop. Of course, Axe Cop has the cheese.
It's written by a kid.
You know, he's working with his 6-year-old brother. My point is that all those examples are things that came out well before Shirtless Bear Fighter. But I'm just a huge fan of childlike absurdity. I could do without, you know, the flapping penis jokes. You know, like, that doesn't really do much for me, to be honest. I mean, you know, yeah. I'm not going to pretend I'm offended by it, but it doesn't really, like, that doesn't amuse me. everything else, I mean, just, there's so many, okay. Like, my favorite panel in the whole book is, when there's like a bunch of like lumberjacks running, screaming from a bunch of bears driving monster trucks. And one of the lumberjacks is like, bears driving monster trucks. And the other one says, just like the old fortune teller said.
I mean, there is that kind of stuff. So listen,
I love that. This is so stupid.
I will admit that I like the purient humor of, and again, so everything is censored. So it's not like you're seeing a giant penis on the page, but like, the recurring joke of he's walking around naked and everyone's like, oh my God, can you put that thing away? And then he'll like suddenly turn around to answer something that they said. And all you see is his back. And then there's like a sound effect.
Yeah.
Yeah. And everybody who's standing in front of him all of a sudden are averting their eyes. Like, oh my God, I know it's just the lowest form of humor, but every time that popped up, I laughed. I also like the fact that the other one that got me laughing was when Shirtless Bear Fighter is running around the world fighting different bears. So he's fighting bears in the woods, bears in the cities. He's fighting the Chicago Bears. He's fighting bears in San Francisco. And that visual effect too, also just made me laugh very much. So,
and the whole, like, you know, the sound effect, you know, bear kick, bear punch, you know,
right. So Rodrigo, talk about the absurdity. What you liked or disliked about the absurdity here?
I mean, I really enjoyed it. To me, it's somewhat reminiscent. Like, the first thing I thought I was like, what is this like? Is actually Next Wave. I don't know if you guys remember.
Yeah, I do.
I hadn't thought of that, but that's perfect.
Yeah, it has that, like, it's like, what did you do? I cursed at Captain America. What happened? You kicked my ass, right? Like, that kind of that kind of energy. Where
fall bears out of the plane.
Yep. Yeah, sorry. where he's like this rustic man living out in the wilderness, and then he decides to catch up to the other guys, and he has a jet plane made out of bears. Either made out of or covered in bear
covered
skin.
In bear skins, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, you it's know, nonstop stuff like that, right? And
yeah, so
there's also the sort of like that meme crux of like all of that stuff. It's like, Shirtless Bear Fighter is like Chuck Norris jokes.
Yes.
And the consistent haunting monstrosity that is the Charmin bears,
yes,
which have,
yes,
now been, you know, among us for a decade at least.
Right.
And a little bit of like deforestation type issues.
Yeah, so I want to get into that in the second part. Yeah.
It's like all of that is brought together. It's like, okay, so we got these things together. How are we going to string them together? And it's like, okay, everybody pretend that this is like a, like it's beautifully drawn, but it's like, pretend that this is a poorly animated Adult Swim show. And it's like,
that's an interesting
kind of what
take.
I feel it.
Because I looked at this, it is like, what if you took the insanity that was like the 1980s action movie, like Iron Eagle or Rambo or something like that, and instead of going after, you know, corrupt cops or a whole other nation or whatever, it's a guy fighting bears. And to me, this just felt like a lot of the tropes from 80s action movies being brought into this. So that's interesting. And I guess, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, and I'm still like kind of reeling a bit from Rodrigo talking about Next Wave, because I definitely picked up on the first issue of this just being a humorous retelling of the first issue of Transmetropolitan.
Oh, okay.
You know, where they go into the woods to get the guy who, you know, right, saved them before, and, you know, and him putting pants on is like Spider Jerusalem shaving and cutting his hair.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Society. And so my point is that these guys are clearly riffing on Warren Ellis.
Yeah.
But it's funny, I made that Transmetropolitan connection, but once you said Next Wave, it's like, yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, even though, you would be forgiven for not making this connection, I think it is there for sure.
So yeah. Definitely. I did not make that connection because I was too busy laughing at the, what was it? The hog wizard or whatever from the mountains.
Oh God. Yeah.
So here's the thing. So we've been talking about this and people are like, I have no idea what these guys are talking about. So Shirtless Bear Fighter tells the story of a little baby who was found in the woods by bears. Now, these bears can walk and talk and do bear things, but they all live in the woods and they're doing their own thing. And so the family of bears raises Shirtless Bear Fighter as one of their own. And he has been sworn kind of like a Mufasa to young Kimba. You know, you got to protect these woods. And, you know, of course, the real son of the bears is very jealous of this. And as the story progresses, Shirtless Bear Fighter falls in love with a real woman, and she is murdered, presumably by his very own brother, his blood brother. And so Shirtless Bear Fighter vows from that day forward to fight all bears, regardless of where they are at. And so that's kind of the premise of who Shirtless Bear Fighter is. It starts out with the military, the government coming in and getting Shirtless Bear Fighter and saying, bears are invading everywhere. You must do something about this. And so that then kicks off the adventure until we find out who Mr. Big is. And again, that's why I say to me, it's very much an 80s thing. Mr. Big happens to be the brother of the woman who Shirtless fell in love with. And he is also the owner of a giant toilet paper factory. Hence, maybe some Charlemagne Bear references there. And we also find out that he has employed Shirtless's renegade evil brother to help take down Shirtless by sending wave after wave of bears after him. We also maybe find out that the head of the, what's it called, Tushy Co. or something, that the head of the company, he may have killed his own sister so that he could drive Shirtless insane so he could get access to the forest of trees to make his new toilet paper, which brings me to the second layer.
I love that.
Yeah. But there's so much second layer of this, which is so much. Look at how bad capitalism is. Look at how, as you mentioned already, Rand, deforestation is a big problem. So on the one hand, you can read this as just straight up humor from top to bottom. But if you dig a little deeper, you're suddenly like, oh no, this is a commentary about capitalism. Am I wrong there, Rodrigo?
Oh, no, absolutely not. It's weirdly what makes it feel real, right? There's all this nonsense constantly happening, And what grounds it is like, yeah, but like this is happening. Like forests are being cut down and companies don't care about the environment. They just pay lip service. But if they can find a loophole, then they will just go hog, right? So in this story, you can I don't know, trick somebody into reading this by saying, like, this is a story of a man who has sworn to defend a forest. So his brother and his potential brother-in-law trick him into leaving that forest so that they can destroy it, or so that they can then force the inhabitants to give them the rights to that forest, right?
Yeah, and the fact,
like, that's a thing that happens in this. That's actually kind of the plot of this.
Yeah, and also you could also look at it as, what do colonizers do to the indigenous peoples? In this case, it's bears. It's they have enslaved the bears by giving them this bacon from this bacon wizard that mm-hmm. brainwashes them into thinking that, oh yeah, this guy that's talking about cutting down the trees and turning it into toilet paper and has a mascot of a bear wiping its butt is right, and we should do what they say too. So there's that level as well, in addition to, oh, this guy's a horrible capitalist who makes the bears bring him a golden toilet when he needs to take a poop while he's monologuing.
To me, third level that I did not expect is the heart. I mean is like, imagine how I love these sorts of comics, that this kind of childlike absurdity, but most of them are just silliness. What I mean? And as you talked about, some of them have the silliness, but they're also, they're kind of putting a silly sheen over a more serious idea. This has that, but it also has I was not prepared for the sequence where Shirtless's mother asks Agent Silva where her facial scar came from.
Right.
She went up to the tree to save her cat, and then the cat scratched her, and that's where she got the scar from. But I love, when she says, and then your mother punished her and all this other stuff. And then she's like, and I learned, to, be responsible or whatever. And then she's like, well, what happened with the cat? And it just has a bunch of panels, and it shows, her having this glorious life with this cat. And then the Shirtless's mother really says to Silva what I think is like the thematic line of the series, which is sometimes we learn the wrong lessons.
Yeah.
And that's way more heart than this story needs or deserves. You know what I mean? Sure. It's perfect, And I was that's such a great page in the middle of this really, really silly story.
Well, yeah, I know that. Go ahead.
That sequence is great because it really introduces us to the core of another character who, if Shirtless continues to have adventures, we're expected to see. Shirtless Bear Fighter is kind of embroiled in a like father brother deception plot kind of thing, that can be a little tiresome. So it's nice to get a splash of ladies also talking about their feelings and also talking about their families, and bringing something different to this, because most of the time it takes Shirtless a long time to realize that he shouldn't just be angry and punching everything, right? That he needs to think about what's happening and needs to figure out why these things are happening. So I think it would probably, if somebody wasn't as charmed by the absurdity, it would seem like it takes a long time for Shirtless to get what's actually happening, right?
Right.
So it's nice to have this secondary sort of emotional through line as the main part of the book kind of unravels into big reveals about what actually happened.
Exactly.
Yeah, so wait a minute. Does this book at one point pass the Bechdel test? Because they're not talking about
only if the cat is female.
Yeah, well, true. We don't know about that. But I mean, Yeah, that was, as you said, Rand, that's a moment in the book where you don't expect. It grounds the Sylvia character so that we have a better connection with her. And we also learn that valuable lesson of the, people learn the wrong lesson. And then you're like, oh, this is how it applies to the story that we're reading. Right. So, yeah. So,
and also, I can't remember his name. The guy who.
Yeah, the guy that's been through every war, the colonel. Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, the guy who plays the character who goes to get Rambo at the beginning of every Rambo movie.
Right. Yeah,
I can't remember, but I thought it was also very interesting that, his betrayal, they don't oversell it or undersell it. And what I mean is that it's like they don't make it like they don't go out of the way to punish the character. They don't go out of the way to justify or explain it. They're just like, this is just another guy who's been screwed over by capitalism.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the thing. So
you're allowed to feel a pity for him, even though he's betrayed the main characters.
Yeah, that's definitely another one of those, right? Where you're like, oh, haha, this is all goofy and silly. But the fact that this is actually happening, like a group coming in, taking over the land, and then hiring the people of that land to work in factories for for poverty wages, right? And it's like, when we get to the agent, he's like, I'm just tired. Like, I fought in every war, and no, you haven't, but I fought in every war, and it's always for the sake of other people, and I never get anything for me. Like, nobody ever does anything for me. Nobody appreciates it. I just keep doing stuff so that other people can become rich, or so that other people can have whatever, right? And it's like, when I was reading that, I was like, all right, I don't like, it's like he betrayed them, but like, I don't hate this guy. I get it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you said, they walked that line perfectly. Like, they didn't, they didn't make it maudlin. They didn't make it, over the top, but they also, they just kind of left it. And again, it was extremely subtle given how this story lacks subtlety.
Right. And so I think that's also, if I were to pick out one problem with this, is that it is so over the top, and all of the promotion that they did in this in 2017, because I remember when we were running it, I was like, oh my gosh, what is this thing? You look at it and you're like, okay, well, this is a one joke story. A guy fights bears, right? How far can this go? And this did have a second volume that went 7 issues. But I can't, and I don't know if Jody LaHoop, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, or Sebastian Gerner, whether they just ran out of ideas after volume 2 or not.
Volume 2 just came out.
It just came out. Yeah. Last year. But that's like almost a 2022.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. 2022 is when the second volume started. It just wrapped up at the end of February, 2023. So,
Right. So, and only one of the writers is involved.
Right.
I don't think Sebastian Gerner's involved in the sequel.
No, it's Jody LaHoop or Hip Hoop. Here's the thing. I think people look at this, especially this first volume, and just gave it a big pass because they thought it was just a one joke premise. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that caused people to pass and miss out on a story that is, yes, on the surface level is the one joke, but then you've got a second and third and deeper thoughts into this that I really, when I hit that moment where I was like, oh no, this is a story about capitalism, deforestation, all this stuff, it really changed how I was looking at this book. And I wonder if this book wouldn't be more popular and we wouldn't be seeing like a movie being made out of it or a cartoon show made out of it, or there's plenty of merchandise of Shirtless Bear Fighter out there. But I wonder if it wouldn't be more popular if people had given it a chance and looked at it beyond just the surface level. And so that's kind of my biggest complaint about this.
No, this is it's kind of like, it's easy to, as a musician, it's easy to get a novelty hit, but then no one can ever take you seriously. You're just going to be, Jill Solbuhl will forever be the girl that wrote that I Kissed a Girl song, even though she's an astonishing songwriter, but no one will care. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's the same sort of thing that it's like, this got them a tremendous amount of attention. You know what I mean? Like, you know, everyone, you know, anyone who's into comics is aware of the concept of shirtless bear fighter, but you're right. You know, but that, you know, that attention comes at a cost.
Right.
And it's that people are going to assume they know what it is before they even look at it.
And again, and, that's how I went into it, was just like, oh, I know what this is. It's a naked guy fighting bears. Ha 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 ha. And then it wasn't. I mean, it was, but it wasn't. Rodrigo, go ahead.
And that's the issue with shirtless bear fighter, is that it comes after this idea of like the Chuck Norris memes and you know, stuff where like characters are like super powerful, like comically super powerful, right? It just comes after One Punch Man, right? And it's like, well, actually, I don't know if it comes after One Punch Man, but One Punch Man is like very popular. So it's like, is this, you know, from the cover, from looking at the cover, it's hard to see if this is actually going to bring anything new other than that really over the top, like, you know, Chuck Norris, like roundhouse kicking the world back through time kind of nonsense. Is this actually going to bring anything else besides that? And you can't tell from the cover. And generally, the publicity stuff that I've seen is playing towards that. Like,
yes,
it's so awesome that it's awesome to the max.
Right.
Rather than ever sort of letting it's like, I hope that the creators are happy with the level of success that they've had with Shirtless Bear Fighter, because I hope that they did it on purpose, right? That they were like, we're going to put out this stupid comic, but it's going to say something. And by the end of it, people are going to at least momentarily have thought about what a garbage system we live in, right?
Yeah.
And they did it. They did it to us. You know, like we weren't expecting it.
And it's because of Cosmo Memory who suggested this for us to review. It's only because of that I picked up the book, because I was that person who, when Image Comics was sending us the publicity on this, I was like, okay, yeah, I get it. Joke. Ha ha ha. Look at the guy. Look at the censor marks. He punches bears. Ha ha ha. And then I just moved on because there was something, you know, quote unquote, better to read, like a Batman or something. I don't know. But, you know, I think to its detriment, that is, there is a bigger story here that I'm hoping people who are listening to this show, you know, the 20,000 of you or however many of you that are listening right now, I hope that if you haven't read Shirtless Bear Fighter because you thought that the premise was dumb, yes, it does have, you know, kid humor stuff at the top level. But there's a bigger story here that I really got a kick out of. And for me, I really feel like everyone should give Shirtless Bear Fighter a chance, because it is at the end of this first volume, it is a charming book, and I fell in love with it more than I thought I was going to. So for me, this is a big thing. Yes. don't squeeze the Shirtless Bear Fighter, please. Rand, what are your final thoughts on Shirtless Bear Fighter Volume 1?
My final thoughts are that if you like the Flaming Carrot, or you like X-Cop, or you like anything you've ever seen from Art Baltazar, then you should probably give this a good look.
Yeah, there you go. Rodrigo, final thoughts from you.
Yeah, it's like a nice, solid level of absurdity throughout. So even if you're not into the messaging, you're probably going to have fun with this. It's clever, and it does clever things with its premise. It plays with its premise, which is fun. You know, it's not just Chuck Norris style jokes. Again, it's something else. So I would say definitely check it out, or, you know, go out in a buying frenzy if you just really want a character who is powered by flapjacks.
There you go. And and pure maple syrup. It's got to be that pure maple syrup flown in from Canada. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Shirtless Bear Fighter Volume 1. Hopefully you found that conversation interesting. Rodrigo is into the Lancer. It's an RPG game where you are in, you pilot giant mechs and you punch things and you escort things. And it's a lot of fun. It's a fun game. And Rodrigo has been doing some analysis and discussion of a Lancer over on his YouTube channel. Rodrigo, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. My YouTube channel, Lopez Family Variety Channel. I've been putting out a Lancer video a month. I'm already done with the one for next month. This latest one is about the main mistake that people make when getting into Lancer, which I'll just tell you right now, it's that they start at too high a level. Like, everybody complains that a lot of people complain the Lancer is too difficult. And then when you ask them, they're like, yeah, we started playing at level 2. And it's like, why? Lancer starts at level 0, right?
Yeah.
So check out the video. It's it goes into it and why it's important to start at a low level, and which I think applies to a lot of games. And sort of some discussion of where that idea that you have to start at a higher level comes from. Here's a hint. It's D&D.
Yeah. That's the Lopez Family Variety Channel. You can find that over on YouTube. Just do a search for that, or Lopez and Lancer, and it will come up there as well. Rand, one more time, where are people going to find your Bella Via music?
Via Bella can be found at viabellaband.bandcamp.com. And again, we will be at FenCon in Dallas, Texas on February 23rd to the 25th. I would be remiss to not also point out that on February 28th, Crashdown Issue 2 will be in stores with art by Ben Templesmith, writing by Tom Garcia and Ryan Sargent, and I am on the editorial team of that comic.
Very good.
So the second issue is coming out February 28th from Whatnot and Massive.
Thank you again, Rand, for joining us, and thank you again, Rodrigo, and thank you, dear listener, for joining us on the show. We would love for you to join us on our Patreon, where even more adventure awaits, including the Major Spoilers podcast pre-show that we've been talking about earlier in the episode. You can find out more at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Next week, it's a general topic right here on Major Spoilers. We promise no corporal punishment. So until next time, remember, we know that you love comics, and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Had the X-ray vision of a Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic bookstore guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I bag and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Start raving, it's like a man of iron. Might not be surprised to find that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being the middle race with a king, son, throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler, whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2024 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
There we go, and we're done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.